Here's what's coming up on today's show.
Like, oh, if I can just do what they do, I'll be fine. Well, the reality is that, generally speaking, avoiding what they do gives you better results.
Right.
But you know what? It's that same desire. Like, they're smart. If I just do what they do, I'm going to be great.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Welcome into the Retirement Cafe with Dan Reese and Brent Oliver over at Avery Wealth. Today, we're going to talk about predicting the future and why listening to predictions can be such an issue for so many families. Welcome in, Dan and Brent. Why do you think this is an important topic to discuss on the podcast today?
Well, I'm sure Dan would agree with this one. So one of the questions that we get over and over, maybe not as much from clients, but if you tell someone you're a financial advisor, wealth manager, they always ask you, well, what do you think is going to happen with the market this year? Right? Have you ever heard that, Dan?
A couple times. Yeah.
Or how about this? Are we going right now? Are we going to have a recession?
Yes.
Like that happens over and over and over again. And
Yep.
I'm sorry to report to everyone listening that Dan and I have no idea. Right?
Yeah. Like
we just don't know what the market's going to do.
Well, it's going to go up, down, or sideways, the market. And are we going to have a recession eventually?
Yeah.
That's
It's going to go up. Sometimes it's going to go down sometimes. Sometimes it's going to go up a lot. Sometimes it's going to go down a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good.
One thing that I do feel pretty confident in is over the long term, the ups are going to outweigh the downs.
Yes, yes. Right? I think that's accurate. And but it's funny because people just, they have a craving, right, for forecasts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, why do people go to fortune tellers? Why do people read, what is it, astrology? You know, all these different things because people have this craving, right, to know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's obviously not real possible. Spoiler alert there. Like, it's just a very difficult thing to do. And so today we're just going to talk about some of the experts that are out there. And, you know, we make fun of them sometimes on this show, you know, so-called experts. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these people are, they really are experts. Oh. They're just not experts at predicting out, you know, the future.
Right.
Right. Smart. But they're super smart people. Yeah. But there's a lot of pitfalls to listening to the forecasters. So we want to help you avoid some of those pitfalls and give you some strategies to do that.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's going to be a good show. So I know the experts you're talking about, the economists, the business management consultants, of course, media members. And there are a lot of people you can throw in this group of so-called experts. But how have they done in their forecasts in the past?
Well, not good.
not very well. I mean, we know there's countless studies, right, and experts that are there, and people are always trying to predict the future, right? That's been going on, and it's going to continue to go on well after this show. We did read an interesting article called Forecasting Follies by Bob Seawright, and he had some really good examples of poor forecasting.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because, again, these are really intelligent people. These are not like somebody, like you think of the guy in Vegas just putting it all on like one number on the roulette wheel. That is not what this is.
Although the outcomes are pretty similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And so like one of them between 2001 and 2006, and you may have heard this name, renowned economist Lawrence Summers, Larry Summers, at that time was a president of Harvard.
So he's a pretty smart fella. Yeah, right?
Not everybody can be president of Harvard.
No.
I've applied, no response.
I don't want that job. So I'm not going to apply, and I don't think I'd get a response.
I don't think I really would. But anyway, he entered a series of what are called forward swaps on behalf of their endowment. So like basically he's making a bet because he believed at that time, based on his models, that interest rates were low and they were definitely going up.
Right.
Right.
So think of that time in 2001 to 2006. I mean, interest rates were low.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But he was wrong.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, that guess or that prediction that he acted on, so that's important. You can have a prediction, right? The difference is, do you act on it or not,
right?
He acted on it, unfortunately, and it lost Harvard about $1 billion.
Right.
Now, that's their endowment. So I wonder how the people that gave that money felt.
Probably not great.
Right.
You know, and that's, I mean, and that's a big, obviously a big bet, mm-hmm. right? In 1998, this is a great one. I love this one. Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman made a prediction about the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So what he said is by 2005, so he said this in 1998, by 2005 or so, it will become clear that the internet's impact on the economy will have been no greater than the fax machine.
Sorry, I'm trying to hold it in.
I mean, it's just like, I think that's wrong.
Well,
right?
he starts
that is
out,
so wrong.
And this is like the soothsayer trick. He starts out by 2005 or so.
Yes.
So what's that mean?
Well, time hasn't really done this one any favors either.
No.
Because if you fast forward to today, has the internet had a bigger impact on the economy
mm-hmm.
than the fax machine at this point?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
It's funny because, again, Paul Krugman also has been an advisor to presidents, been a
yes.
you know, really well-known guy. And
So, again, you know, we're making fun of this, because, you know, but all kinds of people are making these. And so those are just a couple of individuals. But when you lump them all together, do they do better?
No. I mean, the thing is, it's funny. Like, there's been a lot of studies, but this one, CXO Advisory Group, they analyzed 6,582 market forecasts by 68 experts. And this was from 2005 to 2012. By the way, it never changes.
Right.
I think that's important to know. Like, you can look at any years, and it's always about the same. And the accuracy rate was just 46.9. And you're like, oh, that's not bad. Almost half of them are right. That's not really what that means.
No, like a coin flip.
You know,
like they were worse than a coin flip.
They were worse than a coin flip.
And then, so more recently, Wall Street had market forecasts from 2000 until 2020. So this is a little bit more recent.
Mm-hmm.
Showed that the market forecast missed by an average of 12.9% per year.
Jeez.
So they're just like, wait, I mean, that's higher than the annualized return over that period of time.
Well,
they were wrong.
And the reality is like trying to guess a market return is the dumbest thing in the world,
right?
Because there's no rhyme or reason from year to year necessarily why the returns are what they are. But, you know, a lot of them start with, they'll be like, oh, you'll hear very commonly, well, I think it's going to be 8 to 10%, which is like the long-term return. What's funny about that is the market almost never returns 10%.
Right.
Remember we did that study the
yes.
one time, and it was like year by year, the S&P 500, and it averaged like 10%, but it never got 10%
right.
in a year.
And it's all over the place.
You know.
Right? So it's just, yeah. And so that's the thing is, like, these forecasts really just don't look at, or they're just not reliable.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This thing is pretty.
Yeah. I mean, they're not. And the thing is that it's not that the people aren't smart. I mean, I think we want to go back to that.
Right.
They're very smart. And oftentimes it's funny, the most intelligent people struggle the most with investing.
Yeah.
Because of the uncertainty and the unknown all the time, you know, because they want to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. But one of the things, you know, that we've read too is market predictions are unreliable because of all the factors that impacts its performance, right?
Right.
There's like economic conditions, political events, the way people feel.
Right. I mean, think, you can't quantify that in the future,
right,
how somebody's going to feel, or some, you know, company-specific factors, you know, profitability, those types of things obviously drive the performance of the company and the market.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I found this really interesting. So during the Vietnam War, the Secretary of Defense at that time, Robert McNamara, tracked every statistic that he could to give us an advantage, right? So very analytical, data-driven approach to the strategies of the war. And at that time, Edward Lansdale was the head of the special operations. And he came into, at the Pentagon, came in to Lansdale's office and said, well, there's only one thing missing from all of your data.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, you know, he wanted to know what it was, and it was the feelings of the Vietnamese people.
Like, yeah.
How much that impacted their ability to be successful in the war, right? And it's the same thing with the market. Like you talked about sentiment of the people
mm-hmm.
and what's going on in the markets. Like, that's not something that we can that we can predict.
No, I mean there's too many. There's too many variables.
Right.
So I think the better way to think of it is there's too many possible outcomes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can't and they're everywhere.
And there's a bazillion different levers that are being pulled, and all kinds of different things that are happening that you can't account for.
Right.
You know, it's just amazing that some of those forecasts, just how bad they actually were in retrospect. And I'm sure the people followed them and probably made a lot of decisions based on what they were listening to. So that's the question then is why, even though we know that predictions are impossible and nobody can see the future, why do we want to listen to them so much?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just we have a desire. Like, people are risk averse by nature. So most people think, man, if I just can know what's going to happen, I'll be able to make better decisions.
Right. And because we have such a desire to get that information, we want to believe, right, that really smart people, and we gave examples of brilliant people,
right,
giving predictions. But we want to believe that because that's, we want to know that information so badly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up because, like, I haven't heard this as much lately, but, you know, early in my career, I remember, like, one of the things was trying to open up these investment opportunities like the smart people invest, like these endowments and all that stuff. Like, oh, if I can just do what they do, I'll be fine. Well, the reality is that, generally speaking, avoiding what they do gives you better results.
Right.
But, you know, it's that same desire. Like, they're smart. If I just do what they do, I'm going to be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? And so that, and we know that doesn't necessarily work. And it's funny because one of the things that I heard an economist speak to this one time, and I cannot remember what his name was, but it doesn't really matter. He said the best way to understand this stuff about why they struggle so much is that our economy is what would be called an open system. And so, like, an open system means that the things within it are changing all the time, right?
Right.
And so if you have a closed system, like, for example, you have an experiment, right, where you're testing gravity or something like that, and you can control, we only have this many variables, it's in a vacuum or whatever,
right.
There's no wind, there's no air, you know, and then you've got validity, right?
Yeah.
You can predict because it's closed.
Right, like what we were talking about earlier, if somebody said scientifically that they could prove exactly what time the sun was going to rise in 6 months in Tokyo, for example, that's very believable, right?
Yeah.
Because they can do that.
Right.
But you can't do that with all the other variables that are in the market.
Yeah, and that's why, and it's okay. You know, that's the thing, but I love the story. Like, you've got an example of Tiger Woods, which I think, because we're both golfers.
Yeah, so we want to believe that hard work, right, leads to expertise.
Yeah, so
and
if
it
we
does.
Study enough, right?
Right, and it does, right?
Yeah.
It does. So if the story is, if you know, there's all kinds of stories that Tiger Woods would go hit 1,000 golf balls and never take a break. Well, that's how you do become an expert, right? And that's how you, in golf, though, being an expert is in effort is really correlated to skill and the outcome, right? But by predicting, you can't measure all those things. And so you can be really skillful at looking at market data and all that type of thing, but that doesn't mean that you can predict all of what's going to occur.
Right.
Because we just aren't in control of it in so many of those things.
It's almost like you can't practice a prediction.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can practice hitting a golf ball, and you can practice lots of things, whether it's drawing. I mean, there's all kinds of skills that you can get better at. But I guess the best way to put that is predicting really isn't a skill. You know, because it's not something you'd work really hard at and get better at.
No, because you can't predict human behavior. You can't predict wars. You can't predict whether a pandemic is going to occur.
Right.
Like, all of those things would impact a market.
Right. Right.
And so to try to do so is, it just isn't going to work over. I mean, it would much more work over a long period of time, and it does work over a long period of time. But when you shrink it down to what's going to happen next week, next month, next year in the market, that's anybody's guess.
Yeah, it's funny because I always equate it a lot to weather. Now, weather, there's some predictions, and there's some good data out there now, right? But what you just said, we were talking about earlier, the weather, and it's like, you know, sometimes they predict 2 inches of snow, we get 8.
Right.
Because the fact of the matter is that they can predict over the course of a year, generally, or 5-year period, how much total precipitation an area might get or should get on average temperatures. but they can't tell you what it's going to be each day or each week or each month, right?
Exactly.
And it's the same kind of concept, because people get that with weather. It's ever-changing. There's lots of factors that can affect it.
So then what are some of the common mistakes you see when people follow these market or these financial forecasts?
Yeah, I think number one is inaction. And we've talked about this on other podcasts, but one of the things to talk about with forecasts is that people are much more drawn to negative things than positive. So like a lot of news shows and financial news shows will focus more on that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So if everyone's forecasting that the market's about to tank, it would be prudent to be like, if that was really going to be what happened, to not invest, right?
Yeah.
At that time. So it's like, well, I can't do it now,
right?
I better wait for a better time to invest. That's the second one that we wrote down here, is just, you know, you're always looking for that perfect time to get your money in or to begin saving or to take an action.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting about this, and you're like along this list, you know, last one, of course, is changing strategies based on their emotions and what they're seeing and how they're reacting to these predictions. But, the gentleman that does the market review, Larry Swedrow, you know, it was him or it was Ken French, somebody that studied markets forever. And his point was that if predictions were accurate, there would be no extra return for investing in stocks.
Right.
Like if people knew what was going to happen, it would take away all the premiums in investing in stocks.
The risk premium.
Yeah, because there would be no risk. And so the risk would be gone, and then you would get the same return on stocks that you got like on a treasury, right?
Exactly.
Which is really interesting. So like one of the things I think after these mistakes is maybe we should embrace some of this unknown. You know?
Absolutely.
Well, then, you know, if we know that these mistakes can lead us astray unless these predictions are bad, then what can we do then to maybe avoid these pitfalls?
First thing is turn off this noise, right? Just understand, like, you should almost treat it as like a comedy. I hate to say it, but when you watch these people, because I'll give you an example of that. Like, there's a lot of stuff, like, you see economic reports right now, and like, okay, maybe you've got some leading indicators that are down. There, you know, we could go into a recession. Who knows, right? But the reality is that might not happen.
Right.
We don't know that. Things are pointing that way. But if we go out and start making, you know, decisions based on that, you might miss out on one of the best bull runs of all time in a market.
Right. Because a lot of the predictions that we do see in reality, they come true at some point,
right?
But it's just, I mean, it may be the Harvard example that we gave, like, well, interest rates did eventually rise,
yeah,
right? It's only happening now,
right?
You know, this is 17 years, 18 years later,
right?
I mean, he was right at some point, but it just wasn't when he thought it was going to occur. And so, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is like these predictions. The other thing too, like we're talking about, no matter what something looks like currently, it can easily change. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
So that's like why we say avoid the noise, because it literally doesn't do you any good, because no matter what anyone thinks at a given point in time, there's a good chance it's going to be a different outcome than what they think it's going to be.
Right.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, we, as we talk about a lot on this show, we want to control the things that we can control.
Yep.
Right. And make sure that we are getting the answers to some questions that we think are really critical to your success. So throw away all this noise and really focus in on the things that are going to help you improve. Make sure that you're doing the things that you can do to improve your family's financial situation.
Yeah, right. Like the old saying is, control what you can control and do it on a daily basis. You know what I mean? Don't put it off. Like, look at, you know, we always focus in, you've probably heard us before talking about, you know, kind of four key questions around money. Like if you focus on those, you're going to be in a lot better situation. Because the one thing I will tell you, time flies. I remember going through 2008, that market crash. And you know what's crazy? It went by just like that.
Yep.
Like it didn't seem like it at the time. But then you look back and you're like, man, it was fast. So if you just keep doing the right things, you get right through those things.
Absolutely.
Right? So,
and so we do have a tool that we use to help you answer these questions, but let's go through a couple of the questions. I think one of the big questions that everybody should be asking themselves is, are you working towards making work optional or financial independence, as some people call that? And so we want to make sure that you're doing the things to progress in that direction.
Yeah. And that's not just hoping your account values go up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can hope that they go up, but you probably should take some other steps to make sure that they do. And some of those involve, the next one is, are you using your income wisely? And so this is really something that you can control. So are you saving the right amount? Do you have a reasonable amount of debt? Are you spending an appropriate amount given your income? And then, you know, what is your tax rate? Those are the kind of the four things that you can do with your money.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you understand that.
Yeah. And making sure that's allocated soundly so that you can continue to grow that net worth.
Absolutely.
Like growing net worth could be paying down debt, could be improving savings, right? Both those things contribute to it, which is back to making work optional,
yes.
Right? Which is super important. And the next thing is just, do you have the right mix of assets, you know? Like really understanding, you know, if you did a simple net worth statement, where's your money?
Yeah.
Is it in things that, you know, over time are going to be able to create income for you? Or are they things that are more of an expense? Like we think of, you know, property oftentimes, if it's not rental property, it's usually an expense, right?
Yes. Yep.
You look at it and go, I have three houses. You're like, okay, how are those going to create income for you? Right?
Yes. So, and then do you have the right amount in liquid assets? Do you
right.
have the right amount in retirement accounts? Things like that. So that's another question. And then lastly, are you taking an appropriate amount of risk, right? Do you have proper exposure in those different types of accounts is an important piece to this.
Yeah, just by making sure that you're able to answer those questions and really stay on top of what you're currently doing. We can't emphasize how important that is because the predictions, who knows what's going to happen. But over time, like my mom and dad used to always say, hey, don't worry, things always tend to work themselves out.
Yep.
And how true is that with finances?
Yeah, well, especially when you're doing the right things, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing the right things, it's not a guarantee that everything's going to work out, but you're definitely giving yourself a lot better chance.
Yeah, and just understand where you're at today, the right things with your money, that's what you focus on. You're going to have a much better quality of life also, right? I just want to comment real quickly because we have had, Brent and I both have had some clients really get kind of caught up in this idea of these predictions, like dire predictions,
yeah.
right? And it can really have a negative effect on your life, you know? And so the biggest thing is, you know, is that really helping you? Because, you know, many times these super dire predictions, if they come true, all the stuff we're talking about, it's not going to really matter anyway.
Yeah. Right. And so you're so much better ahead because those things that you're referring to, we have no control over
right.
that. You know, I mean, if there's another world, whatever it may be, another world war, you know, who knows, and a collapse of the financial system. I don't know. There's all kinds of mm-hmm. theories out there of things that could happen. And sure, anything can happen.
Right. right.
But we don't have control over that. But we do have control over the decisions that we make and making good, sound decisions with our finances based on our own numbers.
Right. right?
And
right.
that's what's really important.
Absolutely.
So important. So we know predictions are not usually our friend, especially when it comes to making financial decisions. And you've taken us through this today. Let's end the show by recapping what we talked about.
Yeah. So again, I mean, we spent a ton of time talking about forecasting, a lot of different examples, things like that. What we probably already knew is that it doesn't work, mm-hmm. right? I mean, predicting the future, there's no crystal ball. And so we need to just make sure that we're turning off that noise and really, really focusing on the things that we can help, making sure that we can answer those four questions that we talked about. If you need help in that area, Dan mentioned it in a previous show, feel free to reach out to us and help. We can give you a trial on that tool to help you know your numbers and get a really good idea. You can email us at support@averywealth.com or of course reach out to us by phone at 517-783-1695. We'll be happy to have a conversation with you and get you pointed in the right direction.
Great stuff, guys. As usual, we appreciate all your time and your insight. As always, I encourage you to visit averywealth.com for any questions or to learn more or to hear additional podcasts. You can always call 517-783-1695 to get in touch with Dan and Brett. All right, guys. Appreciate it today. We'll look forward to doing it again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategy. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.